Hello and welcome back to the California Cannabis Report. I'm your host, Jared Schwass, and we have another exciting episode for you today. We head back up to the Mendocino Mountains where we interview award-winning cannabis farmer Mark Grayshock of Greenshock Farms. We talk about his award-winning buds, his process, and his history in the cannabis industry and how he grows his cannabis. It's a lot of good information for you. It's an exciting episode. I hope you come up, join us. Let's go up to mountains and see what's growing up in Mendocino. Come on, let's go. Welcome to Mendocino County. I'm here with Mark Grayshock of Greenshock Farms. We're up here in Mendocino. Mark, give us a little description of where we're at right now.
Man, we're right here in the heart of Mendocino County. We're right in the middle of the county right here up Sherwood Road. Beautiful location. You know, we're at 2,500 foot high here, so we have some neat mountain influence and stuff. We're probably only about 15, 20 air miles away from the coast right here. You know, we're in a beautiful cannabis environment right here.
Yeah, and beautiful for the cannabis and beautiful for the eyes as well. And speaking about the cannabis, you've won, let's see, I had to write it down, there's been so many. 2021 in the Emerald Cup, you placed first and third in the personal grow, third, seventh, 16th, and 18th in the licensed grow. And then in High Time SoCal Cup, you've won third place with Gilded Extracts. 2019, you won WeedCon first place for the TCHA, Tincture first place CBD flower, second place hybrid flower in the Emerald Cup 2019, second place, seventh place, 10th place, and Breeder Cup of the Year. You've done great things up here in Mendocino County. You know, tell the people your story, how you got into it, and, you know, about the story of where we're at right now as well.
Awesome. Thank you, Jared. Thank you for reading through those awards. You know, those represent a lot of hard work. Those don't come easy. So to have those type of awards behind us just kind of shows how much heart and soul we really do put into what we do here. I love cannabis flowers. You know, this is something to me, I didn't get smoking until I was out of high school. And once I was out of high school and smoking, I felt like I'd been lied to, something terrible. Wasn't anything like I thought it was going to be. You know, it was a wonderful experience smoking cannabis. And I love nature. I'd always loved nature. And smoking out in nature, it just brings a lot more things present to you. You start noticing a lot of things you might not notice when you're not high and stuff. And I love those type of feelings. And, you know, weed was expensive at the time. This was back in the early 90s, like 92, 93, right when I was getting out of high school. And I started seeing some deals going down around me sometimes. I was like, man, that stuff's worth a lot, you know. And I was working on commercial fishing boats at the time, really just working my butt off, and I didn't feel like I wanted that to necessarily be my future. So I started looking into what it took to grow cannabis, and I loved the mountains, and I was really aware of the mountains, and this would be down there and outside of Orange County, mm-hmm. Out in the Santa Ana Mountains. It's kind of a small mountain range, but it's a very wild mountain range too. Even though there's 17 million people within like a 3-hour drive of that area, nobody goes into those mountains really. Mm-hmm. So I had neat
especially
little,
back in the 90s.
Exactly, especially back then. And so I had a nice little playground to kind of learn what I guess would be my trade. The first couple years would be typical. You know, I could talk about a lot of struggles, you know. Learning curves, you know, pretty rough when you're out in those mountains trying to grow cannabis and everything else is out after them too, whether it be the animals or people or police. And so it was a pretty good learning curve for me. And fortunately, I hooked up with somebody who'd been in the game for a long time. His name was Chris, and he came in and started kind of helping me out in my setups and my operations and teaching me really about breeding also. And so down in those mountains for 10 years, just a lot of times myself and my brother, we were growing cannabis out there, and it was best time of my life looking back on it and everything. I loved it. But, you know, eventually we did run into problems with police busts and stuff going on down there. And so I had some friends that were up here in Mendocino, and I was aware of what was happening here with kind of the larger medical grows kind of out in the open. And I was obviously very interested in that. So we came up here about 15 years ago and started doing it this way. And I'm sure glad I came up here because I love Mendocino County.
It's a great place, and it's a great place to grow. As we know, as you guys should know if you don't. You mentioned a little bit of, you had a little bit run-in with the police down in Santa Ana. Can you want to go into, you know, your experiences with enforcement, if you had any enforcement troubles up here after you moved up here and started growing up here, any troubles with camp at the sheriff's?
Yeah, you know, down south, that was the problems we were running into. It was the camp program, and those mountains were infiltrated with large cartel grows. And, you know, we were trying to just put ours kind of in between things and kind of making room where we could kind of fit in. And I think we were collateral damage a lot of times on the bust. You know, we only had plants range at sometimes gardens of 50, maybe a few hundred plants, compared to the big cartel grows of, you know, 5,000, 20,000 plants. And they would come in there generally to get those, but a lot of times they'd be aware of the other ones. And if they were coming by ours, they'd take ours too. And, you know, it's a lot of setup. It's a lot of hard work out there. And you're out in the middle of nowhere packing in this fertilizers and chicken wire cages and hosing and all this stuff. So once they come in and take it from you, that hurts.
Yeah, and you're during those times, you were hiking in, right? You can't just drive up to your grow. You have to hike in, right?
And the whole thing, looking back on that, that was all the fun of it. You know, it was a very militant type of a thing where you're having to be very clandestine in your activities. You know, on trailheads, you can't be seen by people. You're even making your own trails into places that aren't on the normal trails, and you're being very sneaky about everything. You know, a lot of things are happening at night with drop-offs and things of getting material out in places and stuff. So to me, that kind of stuff became fun. You know, it just became part of it.
Yeah, and I feel like that's a part of the reason why the proponents for the regulated market, you know, kind of they that's why they think it's a good part, is that now you can do it open and you don't have to go into some national woods and create your own trails and whatnot.
Big time, you know, and I'll be the first one to say, you know, I was trying to be very conscious and environmental about what was going on in there, but some of the stuff that I saw that was happening out in those forests was devastating to the forest. It was really sad. So I'm glad to see it changing.
Yeah.
But, you know, I was going to grow cannabis wherever I needed to grow cannabis because I needed it. My friends needed it. So one way or another, I was going to make it happen. And for me, the National Forest was really the only option back at that time.
Yeah, understandable. And so what, other than, you know, the ability to be more open and have essentially a bigger grow on operation, what is there any other thing that pushed you into the regulated market?
Yeah, you know, I love my cannabis. You know, we have these award-winning strains. I know what good cannabis is compared to mediocre or not so good cannabis. And it's a big goal of mine to try to bring as best of a cannabis and as much of it as I can to the market. I think it makes for a better world that we all live in. So to me, I feel a responsibility of doing that. I know how to grow it. We got a good team. We're setting things up now to be able to figure out how to produce more of it and get more of it out there to people, because I think it only makes for a better world.
Great. No, I do too. I think the more access people have, the better it is for everyone. Even if you don't use it, I feel like it's better for everyone.
Thank you, Jared. Yeah. I do too.
And in your effort to bring greater access, how has your move into the regulated market been? You know, has it been, obviously there's ups and downs and bumps, but overall, do you think it's been a good move, successful?
Yeah, I'm very glad we're doing it. You know, I don't think we'd stay alive in this business for a long time past this if we weren't going this direction. Excuse me, I see the black market really coming to an end over the years ahead. You know, I know a lot of the analytic companies point to that happening. You kind of see it happening in the marketplace kind of as we're speaking. So I feel this is definitely the right avenue for us to take. It has been a challenge. You know, it's been very chaotic in a lot of ways, learning everything going on with the regulations, you know, and just adjusting to all the new business type of things that we have to learn about with the marketing and, you know, getting things into shops and stuff these days is a big challenge with all the different kinds of hurdles and all the different games that are played sometimes with the bigger companies getting their stuff on the shelves. So we're learning about all this. One thing we don't do a lot is give up. So we're hanging in there, and we're planning on hanging in there all the way till the end until we're successful, or we're successful now to a small degree, but we really feel like we've made it, and we're not there quite yet.
Yeah, and, you know, for someone who's packing soil and bird cages up a mountain, I don't think you're going to stop, and I don't think there's any stopping you.
Thank you. That does show your tenacity right there.
It does. And you touched on a little bit about the big companies coming in, and a lot of people who are against the regulated market, they're against, because a lot, I feel like they're against the big companies kind of taking over cannabis and the cannabis culture. And so what is the cannabis culture to you? The state of it? Do you think it's being hurt by the big businesses coming in? If you want to give us your take on that.
That's a really good question there, Jared. You know, I feel like it's inevitable the way this is going down. You know, it's big business. When you have big business, you're going to have big companies coming into it. So we're seeing all these corporate companies coming into this space, you know, and right now we're all here in California, and we're kind of stuck inside the state and inside having to sell into these 800 shops. I know that everybody has their eyes set for the bigger game once the interstate stuff starts to happen, and a lot of brands are recognizing, you know, California is kind of the big play where a lot of these brands will be coming out of. So here we are right now in the middle of this fighting it out. And it's a, you know, to some degree, it's pretty fair. You know, we've been in the game for a long time. We have great strains. A lot of these guys haven't been in the game at all, but they have a lot of money and business expertise. So they bring in what they bring in. We bring in what we bring in. And we're kind of wanting what they got in the business expertise. You know, they're kind of wanting what we got in the cannabis expertise part of it. But, you know, the culture itself, to me, this is an absolutely amazing and wonderful culture. You know, we've been kind of a persecuted people for a long time now, you know, thrown in jail, families ripped apart all over this cannabis. And I'll mention in that aspect, that's one of the things that might bother me some of the most about watching what's happening in the corporate part of it right now is, you know, we've got friends up here and all over California that have been in this business their whole lives, and we're watching them lose their livelihoods and getting pushed out of it, and we're watching these big corporations move in and take over. And in that aspect, I would not call that a fair game, because what's happening, and you know, you're probably aware of a lot of this money, not all the money, but some of the money comes from alcohol companies, pharmaceutical companies. And these companies were companies that were on the opposite side of this game at one time. You know, they were lobbying to have this stuff remain illegal and all this. And now that they've lost that part of the battle, here they come into this side. So it just, that kind of game playing kind of irks me a little bit, upsets me, just knowing what's going on in that and everything, and having it all be about money and stuff. And cannabis culture, to me, you know, there's a lot of good truth in this and stuff, and it's not all about money. This is about a good world and, you know, friendship and people and nature and a lot of things besides money that are also important to calculate in. So when the corporations come in with their money side of things, right now that's probably one of our biggest challenges, is just figuring out how to stand up to them and compete also on the shelf space and just not giving up. But, you know, they got a lot of money.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, one thing that I think needs to happen more is more on the justice reform, because you see all these people making money, growing, you know, making lots of money while there's people sitting in jail. Exactly. For selling the same thing they're selling and killing it out in the open, you know. So that needs to change, and people need to get out of jail if they've been arrested for cannabis.
So well said. I mean, and to be truthful about it, and just to watch that whole thing, you know, I have a lot of friends that are minorities and stuff too, and they are, you know, picked on so badly. To have one of my friends that lives down in Oakland, to hear his stories about how many times he's been pulled over on his travels and harassed, it's just a sad thing. And it's all over, you know, cannabis is the excuse for it. It's probably over bigger things, but it's just sad to see kind of some of the things that have taken place in the past 30 years to this culture, what we've had to go through as a culture. And now, you know, the culture seems like a lot of times it's in the on the verge of disappearing, and that's why I love working with the boys so much. You know, right now, Mendo Dope here is they're keeping the culture alive. They bring, you know, everything's real, and I think this is an important culture to not let die off.
Yeah, no, I agree, and I think there's a middle point that we can all come to where people who are, you know, legacy growers, people who have been in the industry for a lot longer than a couple of years, and then the new people coming in, you know, they, like you were mentioning before, each party has something to give, and if they just come together with respect of each other, I think there's a beautiful thing to happen, and I think cannabis can actually make that happen. You know, especially coming from Ukiah. Ukiah is a place where there's hippies and there's redneck farmers all in the same spot, but they all get along to some degree. And I think the cannabis culture can play out just like that.
I love hearing that right there, Jared, because you see this world we're stuck on is a pretty small place, and there's a lot of different people and a lot of different ideas, and we need to come together here and all get along. And if there's anything that's going to do it, it's going to be cannabis. I mean, this is a worldwide culture. This has been a worldwide thing that's happened with everything illegal across the world and stuff. So we've all been prosecuted in this way, and it's neat to have the opportunity to now to let it out mm-hmm. and be able to consume it, you know, freely, and to see what that brings, because that nothing brings people together better than cannabis, in my opinion.
I agree. So you mentioned that you partnered with the Mendo Dope Boys. How did that partnership happen? What are some synergies that you guys have together?
I love it, man. I love those stories in life where you just don't ever know what's in front of you and you meet up and something takes off from it like that. You know, I was well aware of the boys. I was listening to the music, you know, and they were in the magazines a lot. And being up here in Mendocino, I was proud of them, like, you know, making a name for Mendocino here and putting out what's happening up here. And at the Natural Cannabis Company, they used to have some parties, some harvest parties, and we would meet up there and smoke a little bit together. And, you know, you start laughing together and you start finding out, like, man, I like these guys. These guys are fun and stuff. So started hooking up like that. And then, you know, as things were becoming a little more competitive a few years ago about getting your information and stuff out there, you know, we were starting to have some of these awards and didn't seem like anybody was aware of it, you know, unless you put it out there. Like, corporations aren't going to put out your awards for you. So it's like, okay, man, I need to get this information out there. And they're real good on the social media stuff and things. So kind of brought them in on that side to kind of help me out getting some of this stuff out there. And we found out we just love farming together. Love doing this together. We're strong on the culture. You know, we have a lot of things we see eye to eye on. So we've become just, it's really fun hanging out with the boys and just, you know, farming together like this. And we've got our show, the Green Dope Show, now that I think is in season 4. And really, this is just a love of what we do and coming together and doing what we love together. And it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, awesome. Yeah, and you can see, it's the Green Dope Project on YouTube. You can see how much fun you guys have together on those videos.
We do. We truly have a lot of fun. We just did the smoke report where we smoked the Kerala strain there, and it was kind of less than what I guess you would call fantastic smoke, but we smoked it, and we just had so much fun smoking it. When I need a good laugh, I go back and watch that video now.
I'll check it out. Speaking about this great transition, going into kind of the cultivar strains that you do have, you know, introduce the people to the ones. I mean, like I said, like I was just reading off at the beginning, you have several award winners. You know, if you can go into some of those and some of the ones you're working on right now and go through the smell and just talk about them.
Super.
A little bit.
Thank you for the opportunity to do that, because I love talking about the strains and what these are like and stuff. You know, growing cannabis in California, we have access, you know, 25 years ago when I started, there's a lot of strains around, and, you know, some do better than others. So I started recognizing, and especially in different climates and areas and stuff. So I had a goal of always trying to grow out as much as I could, kind of see the things that would work good and the stuff that wouldn't work good. And I was always pulling the stuff that was working well for me and the things I liked out and starting to breed them together. And then through the years of doing that, you know, you just come across more flavors and more strains all the time. So that became something I just did in my life, which would be running as much material as I could to know what was out there flavor-wise and everything, and to start breeding with it myself. I like having unique things that are different, you know. That's I think, something special about cannabis is just all the different types of terpenes, all the cannabinoids, all the types of ways they mix up together. And just some of these things, you know, you don't find unless you're out there breeding and trying to make these things and stuff. So that's what I'd been doing my whole life. And it really came from me wanting those flavors. You know, I liked smoking them, so I was looking for stuff that I liked and enjoyed smoking. And in the process of doing that, you find out that, oh, other people like these flavors too. So, you know, I'm always trying to create things that are different and unique. And that's one of the things, like at the Emerald Cup in 2017, when we won two real special awards that year. We won the highest terpene flower, and we also won the most interesting terpene cannabinoid combination flower at that time. And what they did is they showed like a galaxy up on the board right then, or on the screen. And, you know, it showed like all the stars kind of clustered together close in this galaxy, and then a few stars that were kind of way outside of things. And that's where a lot of our stuff fell into, you know. It was those categories that were way outside the normal stuff. Like, you know, I know that the popular stuff's the OG Kush flavors and this and that, but I also know that that market's well supplied. There's plenty of that stuff out there. So I felt like that wasn't going to be my lane, you know. That's, everybody's kind of got that. So I wanted stuff special that was in our own lane. And so that's how a lot of this stuff started to get developed, is just, I knew we needed this type of material too, to be able to make what I would consider a really successful brand moving forward. Is we needed something that was different than everybody else, and to have something different and also be able to win those type of awards with was just very, very fortunate, I feel like, for me and for our group, because this is why we're having our success now, is because of these flavors and strains. And, you know, the marketplace right now, they value everything on this THC level thing. You know, everybody's coming in and asking for they want the highest THC for the lowest price. You know, that's the market trend right now. I don't call that a very smart consumer, because once you start to really learn about cannabis, there's a lot more value besides just the THC. You know, there is all these terpenes, there's these very rare terpenes, rare cannabinoids, and when you start mixing and putting these things together, that's where you end up with the big bang for your buck. You know, that's where you really get high. It's not necessarily from that THC, it's the interaction of all the different stuff going on. So at the Emerald Cup, you know, they'll tell you it's not usually the most potent strains that win that. It's the most enjoyable experiences. It's the most fun thing to smoke. It's the thing that you just keep going back and smoking, because it makes you feel good, taste good, all that stuff. So those type of awards represent that type of cannabis. It's not the stuff that, you know, is the highest THC. It's what I call truly the best cannabis, which is stuff that just, like when I smoke it, instead of the highest THC thing, you know, you smoke that, you're real stoned, you call it. It wouldn't be good for an interview type of thing and stuff, you know. But this type of, like, more, most of it's more sativa orientated. The flavors are extremely exotic in it and everything, and it gives you a different type of a high. It really lifts you up, picks you up, makes you feel happy, good to be alive. You know, I know the world's full of depression these days, and this is very antidepressant type of weed. It makes you feel good. It makes you happy to have friends. You know, it makes you happy that nature's existing and all that kind of stuff. So to me, that's some of the true medical benefits of cannabis right there, and that's what we're going for.
Perfect. Awesome. Yeah. And what I envision is this the kind of bud that if you don't have a good supply of it, you keep it for those special occasions where you have people over. And then that way, when people come to your house, you know, at the end of the night or the beginning of the night, they're going to have a good time.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And the body, that endocannabinoid system's interesting in the way that, you know, it's if you keep feeding it the same exact thing, like let's just say a high THC, not a lot of different terpenes, you keep feeding it that, it becomes very accustomed to that quick, and you won't get that same level of high anymore. So you really want to, from what my experience is, mix things up and hit the endocannabinoid system from different angles and different spots, and that really will sometimes fire up the system. You know, like we'll have the one strain out here that's the purple candy cane. It also is called Storyteller. Because when you smoke this, as soon as you start smoking it, it just wakes you up and you start talking about stories. And I mean, I don't even know where this stuff comes from, but it's just what happens. And that's special cannabis right there that does that.
Yeah, that sounds like it. I want some of that.
You got it, Jared.
So other than the storyteller, aka Purple Candy Cane, you want to let people know what are their, like, the names of the strains and the flavor and the noses that they have?
Absolutely. You know, one of our most popular strains right now is the Tropical Sleigh Ride. That's the one where the Pog or the Passion Orange Guava, that is a Tropical Sleigh Ride pheno. Like, we'll find phenos a Tropical Sleigh Ride, and when they fit a distinct kind of profile, we might rename them something like that. But a lot of the stuff comes out of this Tropical Sleigh Ride line. I came across that line by the Purple Candy Cane. Now, the Purple Candy Cane would be an example of, like, something that, you know, through all those years, I was mixing different strains and things together to get that strain. There's probably a dozen different strains to make up Purple Candy Cane. And then you get it in the Emerald Cup and it does well like that. So then my theory was, well, I might as well try to find some other strains that have also placed really high at the Emerald Cup and blend them together. You know, 12 different strains, maybe at least 10 different strains that went into the Candy Cane. And then it did well 2 years in a row at the Emerald Cup. And so I got another strain that had been doing real well, and it even won a couple Emerald Cups there with the In the Pines pineapple pina thing. And that's from Mean Gene. That's Jeannie's nephew. And bred those two together. And as soon as I saw the first ones of those phenos, the way they smelt and stuff, I knew I had something very special on my hands right there at that point. And then we entered it back in the Emerald Cup, and then it won that highest terpene flower, the most interesting terpene cannabinoid combination. So we certainly had something special at that moment. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, flavors and different lines, this is something I'm addicted to, and I do too much of it, you know. I mean, I got stuff I'll never be able to start because I just got too many different things all over the place. But some of the other stuff we've been really focusing on here has been the CBD lines of things. You know, as I get older and I've smoked a ton of cannabis in my life, you know, you start to notice, well, when talking about that endocannabinoid system, you know, and it has different receptors for all this different cannabinoids and stuff, you want to hit those different receptors if you can, figure out what they're going to do for you and stuff. So CBD is an important part of the endocannabinoid system and what it does. You know, from what my understanding is, it kind of tries to create homeostasis to some degree. It tries to figure out what's wrong with the body, uses different elements from nutrition to, you know, sunlight, vitamins, to try to figure out how to fix things and put it back together, including things that you could put into the system with terpenes and, you know, the different cannabinoids. So something along that line seems to be going on with that. And CBD, you know, for how many of us have smoked so much THC for so long, I feel like CBD is something now that's a good thing to put into the system as well. So I've been really working on, we got really lucky 10 years ago and had some CBD lines that popped up out of nowhere, kind of out of some of our genetics. They shouldn't have been necessarily CBD lines. You know, it was all heavy Afghani indica type stuff that was all THC dominant. But all of a sudden out comes popping one perfect one-to-one to CBD THC thing 10 years ago before, you know, you'd ever really heard about CBD. And this got out in the marketplace in a couple of the shops. And next thing you knew, I got a little feedback coming back. One of the shops actually was trying to purchase this strain because they'd had it tested and they saw that it was this one-to-one ratio and that something really special was about it. And so that made me aware of the CBD thing. And I started researching, started breeding with it and stuff. And now, to me, you know, one of the things I really like is new cannabis consumers coming into the market and trying cannabis out for their first times to see what it's about. And there's where you have the bud tenders and stuff sometimes can really make some mistakes and they can point people in the wrong direction and stuff. And to me, you know, you really, that first time user, you want them to be very comfortable and have a good experience with it. And smoking a big THC dominant thing isn't going to do that for them. They're probably never going to smoke again. So to introduce them slowly in a nice, easy manner is the way to go, I feel. So some of these CBD ratio THC strains, you know, I'm not talking pure CBD.
Yeah.
I don't really prefer those. I like the THC CBD combinations and stuff. So like what we're searching for these days, and we have some pretty nice ones, would be like that 1-to-1 ratio, one with a perfect 1-to-1, 10% THC, 10% CBD. It's got 3.8% terpenes. It's a myrcene dominant terpene in that one, but very medical of a strain. And breeding with that strain through the years, we'll get all kinds of other flavors and ratios come off of that. So like as an example, we've got our G Lime Burst here, which is a 6% THC, 18% CBD, it's 4.2% terpenes, and an osamine dominant terpene behind that one. So what I'm talking about here is kind of this real synergistic medical cannabis here, which you see getting written up and talked a lot about these days, but you don't actually see a lot of it in the marketplace right now. You know, you see a lot of the CBD flower. You do see some of the THC-CBD ratio stuff, and, you know, that's something I'm just really excited about in the future is more of that type of product as well.
Yeah, no, that's groundbreaking. I mean, there's really not, like he's mentioned, there's really not much. There's this CBD-THC ratio. There's either have the CBD stuff or you're going for the straight THC strains and products. That's really exciting. And you touched a little bit on just mentioned two different types of terpenes. If you will, for the listeners and the viewers, kind of explain the difference between just those two types and maybe other types if you want to.
It's something that I feel the listener should really go out and try to learn and educate themselves about this, because it's very fascinating what's being discovered in this area right now and what's happening. But yes, let's go with the myrcene dominant terpene. Myrcene has the ability to open up kind of the blood-brain barrier as your endocannabinoid system's hit with that. So the THC is instantly absorbed into the blood system very rapidly and fast. So you'll get a very fast, quick onset of your high. And like that would be an example of the storyteller, what I was telling you about, the purple candy cane, myrcene dominant, 22% THC, but the myrcene, the way that's set up, it hits you fast and gets into your blood system. And I think that's what inspires the quick storytelling type of a thing and stuff. And when you have like osamine is a very rare terpene, like when we first did the Tropical Sleigh Ride in 2017, it's my understanding that less than 1% of all cannabis that was tested would be osamine dominant cannabis. But also we won some awards with that, and people are quick to kind of see what's going on in the marketplace. So they recognize like, okay, you want osamine, we'll give you osamine. So that's been going way up in the entries. There's a lot more of them now that are osamine dominant. But osamine is a very rare terpene. It's one that, like, what it would do for you is it's antiviral, antibacterial, antifungal. And the year when we won that most interesting terpene cannabinoid combo, it would be because of that osamine terpene, and then that would be combined with the CBG cannabinoid was the one that won with. And the reason is CBG is also antiviral, antibacterial, anti-cancerous. And so when you combine those two things together that both do the same thing, that's what I think they start to refer the synergistic or synergy of these two things together. So you have a more powerful force. Like let's say the endocannabinoid system, the CBD recognizes some cancer or something in the body, and it has CBG and some of these terpenes to be able to possibly utilize to fight that. I think that's what it looks like it kind of is able to do. Mm. But there's so many different terpenes, so many different cannabinoids, and the way that they interact with each other in all kinds of different ways is really fun to learn about. Mm-hmm. And I mean, the possibilities seem like they're endless and stuff.
Yeah, and we were talking about a little bit of this earlier before we got on camera, is I'm so excited to see science dive further into this and, you know, I'm hoping that they can get a complete roadmap of all the endocannabinoids and the terpenes, and so we can actually know what's out there. Then we can get the artists, you guys, the growers, to mix and match, put this together, and then we can actually see what this plant can actually, the full potential. I think we just touched on the potential, and it's already been great. So imagine once we start diving into the full potential, it's going to be fantastic.
Big time, Jared. You know it.
I think so. So other than the CBD ratios that you're working on, trying to get the, you know, different types of ratios and whatnot, is there anything else that you're really excited about that's in your R&D phase right now?
Yeah, I could talk about these ones all day long. All the different stuff, you know, like we got one right now, orange turpentine. It's another, what I've done is I crossed the purple candy cane with Long Valley Royal Kush, and some of those phenos will come out with just this crazy orange, gasoline, dank Kush type thing that comes off of them. And, you know, as soon as we discovered them, we thought, like, oh boy, we're on to something big here with this line. Let's see what they think about this. So what do? We put it in front of the judges at the Emerald Cup to see what they think about it. And last year we would have got seventh place in the personal. That was the first one I turned in to just kind of see how it went over, and it got seventh place. So that was a really good sign. This year we found a few more phenos of them, and then I would have won. We got one at 18th place in the sun grown this year, and then one of them third place overall in the personal category. And that's an amazing turpentine dank smell taste right there. That's a caraethylene dominant terpene right there, and it's absolutely delicious weed in the mouth. Like, the way it just coats the mouth with the orange flavor and the gasoline flavor is really something to be desired. So that's a new strain line right there that mm-hmm. we're really excited to keep working on. A couple other flavors come out of that same one. We got some stuff we call Purple Royale, which is more kind of like a greasy, grapey, oily kind of, and that also comes out of the orange turpentine Purple Royale strain line. What I do is, you know, when people ask me about breeding, I don't go back and like stabilize strains and things. What I'm really trying to do is getting a big expression to come out of the cannabis, so I can really search through the different styles, the different flavors, and find the things that we think that are the best. And if you have everything the same, you can't do that. So I kind of on purpose shake it up and make it put a lot of expression out there to be able to get a lot of selection.
Yeah, sounds like it's working out for you.
Thank you.
Well, we got some exciting strains coming along. I'm super excited to start trying those, especially the ones that won. So let's talk a little bit about how you grow the strains, the process that you use. I see that you use a TPM method. Explain to people that method and your growing process.
Yeah, our growing process, there's nothing secretive to this process at all. Like, you know, everything's very basic. Like, this is a nature-orientated garden. We want to incorporate, you know, the earth into our program. You know, we don't bring in a lot of outside inputs. I mean, the earth, the dirt, you'll see a lot of these setups, and, you know, they bring in all this generic soil that's got all this perlite and all these different things. You know, we're just using the earth. Well, you put some compost and some, you know, fertilizers in there, some guanos, but we're just using the earth. Like we were talking earlier about the Appalachian and the Tawar projects and stuff coming here, and how, thank goodness, they've recognized that to do that properly, you're going to have your plants down in the earth and in the ground and the real soil. It makes a big difference. You know, I can tell people out there right now through all the years and all the different stuff, this type of cannabis is so clean and smooth, and the taste is there. There's no funkiness that you get like with other stuff. And that's one of the things that separates, you know, like a mediocre okay cannabis to like a really high quality cannabis, is that part of the flush and just that smoothness of everything, so you can really taste the flavors. So this is a very natural process. You know, we're letting nature, we're trying to say we work with nature, we're not working against it. This is, you know, some alfalfa on the top for our cover right now. We're using just natural spring water, some bat guano, some kelp meals, a good organic compost, and we just let nature do now what nature does.
And what's your pest management? I know people use not necessarily pesticides, but use some sort of chemicals to do pest management. What's your pest management?
Okay, perfect. And this is one of the reasons probably why like the black market and that kind of stuff is starting to run into problems as this legal cannabis is coming on the market. Because, I mean, this can be the most, the pest management stuff over the last few years with all these broad mites and these russet mites, you know, they're invisible. You can't even see them on the plants. They do a lot of damage if they get on there in a bad way. So, I mean, it's critical to have a good program. And you could spray like one time, you know, with some of this really bad stuff like the Eagle 20s and stuff, and you're good and clean the whole year, you know, but that stuff also turns to hydrogen cyanide when you heat it up and you smoke it. So, I mean, it can literally kill people. And that's what's in a lot of the black market product that goes places and goes out, because people don't, to tell you the truth, you know, they don't care that much about other people, it seems like. They just want the money. So there's a lot of people, they'll spray that type of stuff on their product, ship it back east, you know, nobody knows the difference. They don't test it or nothing like that. So that's one of the neat things to see out of this regulated market, is the access to good, clean cannabis and the way that the regulators have done the testing thing and to make sure to keep that stuff out of the market. You know, over the last few years, our IPM program, what we've really learned to do and utilize is that working with nature thing. You know, things are a little, you know, we don't keep things real tight and cleaned up. There's other plants growing here. There's habitat. We're trying to create habitat for the predator bugs and stuff out there. The predator bugs have been our most efficient way of controlling the russet mites and the broad mites. And having learned that through the last few years, you just have to give them a chance to work. You have to, you know, continuously kind of put them on a few times to get them established out there and to provide them habitat, you know, where they have a little home so they stay in the garden and they don't just leave. But, you know, we're just always trying to learn as best as we can, as organic, natural, and working with nature as we can.
Yeah, that's great. And did you always grow in the ground, or did you used to use soils, or, you know, was it a learning curve?
I'm glad you made, I got a funny story I just told the other day about this. You know, I did. I started, well, when I first grew, my first grow, I had spent time packing on full moon nights all these bags of soil, like literally a mile and a half out into the forest. I got them all out there, and I had Chris, the guy that taught me. He came up and saw this spot, and he kind of looks at my bags of soil, and he asks me, he says, "You brought all this soil in here? Like, what would you bring this in for?" I'm like, "Man, I thought I needed some good, clean soil." And he's like, pointing to the ground all of a sudden and showing me, like, "Man, you got tons of dirt here, all kinds of good dirt." He's like, "Look at all the different kinds of plants that are growing out of it." And all of a sudden, I'm like, "You're telling me I didn't need to bring all this soil in here like this? I could have just used this free dirt?" And he's like, "Yeah, man, just amend it up a little bit. It's going to grow better than your other soil." And so that was like one of those little aha moments. Like, really? Okay. So I did. I tried some in the ground there that year, and I tried some in my little potting containers. My potting containers were drying out real fast. They weren't doing good. The ones in the ground were taking off. So then I recognized, okay, utilize the dirt that's out here for you. So I started growing in the ground, and I also started experimenting. You know, when we were growing out there, I was bringing Osmocote a lot of times and mixing in the Osmocote. I wasn't growing organic because of the weight and packing all that stuff out there. And so I would start to do some of them like that, though. I'd have like my own little personal hole or two, and I'd do it organic, and I started seeing the difference. And I recognized, like, oh man, there's a big difference in the smoke here and how bad, you know, I'm just always wanting to go for my organic thing, but the other stuff, for whatever reason, you're just not wanting to smoke it as much. It's just not as tasty. I guess your body's probably just feeling, sensing it's not as clean or
something. Was it harsher to smoke?
Much harsher, exactly, yeah. Exactly. And so I started recognizing the importance of the organics and in the ground. And once we got up here and we could just drive right to our, you know, holes and use all the organic products, now we've been able to fully incorporate 100% organic, and it makes a big difference. You know, those salts and stuff that those chemical fertilizers are made out of, I mean, whatever you put into something is what it gets made out of, you know. So, I mean, this is made out of good, pure, clean dirt, and, you know, you got those hydro setups that are growing in big old rock wool and synthetic fertilizer, you know, those are being derived out of the synthetic, so it's just not the same.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and, you know, obviously the years of practice have been paying off for you. And, yeah, no, I wish, you know, more people did it straight from the ground. But like we're talking about, you touched a little bit on the Appalachia program about how you have to be in the ground. I think we're going to see, or I hope, is that with that project, with the program being implemented, that this becomes more of the standard rather than the soils and the chemicals and whatnot.
Big time. And they'll probably force that, huh? I imagine, just by market dynamics and being able to, you know, why would you grow in smart pots up here when you now know you can grow in the ground almost even more effective, and you can get into the Tawar and Appalachian programs that, yeah, I think that will be a big shift over the next couple of years.
I hope so. We'll have to see, though.
We'll see. If there's not, we'll be fine with it.
Exactly.
We'll,
you're
we'll
set.
We'll take that market.
I feel like some people aren't aware of a day-to-day, you know, I know every day is different for you as a farmer, but it can, if you can just like walk people through maybe a kind of a brief summary of your day throughout the grow process, you know, describe the grow process, the whole, like the full term, and then what you're doing kind of throughout that, if you can.
You betcha I can. Like, we'll start like at this time of the year right now during planting time. These days are, you know, we have a lot of different farms coming online right now, very small crew. So we're stretched very thin and working really hard. Like my days, which they've been like this, I guess, for years, because this is just what I like doing. But my days are long days. Yesterday would be an example, you know, up at 6 o'clock in the morning, getting strains out, getting things ready to take to one of the farms to plant yesterday, where we planted 600 plants, and, you know, long, hot days, and we didn't finish until dark. So I had another 15-hour work day, which is not untypical at all. It's a pretty typical day. And I do that generally 7 days a week. Some days aren't getting up at least at 6 in the morning. You know, yeah. I'll get up at 8. But long, long, hard days, and it's not because – it's because – I love doing it, really, and to make this whole vision happen right now, I don't see any other way to do it but to put in the work like that. And then, you know, right now, most of the plants are planted now, and it's just general maintenance. We're coming through fertilizing, you know, doing the predator drops, kind of getting our hose lines all situated right, and then we'll move into August, where then, you know, there's a lot of different little plant work going on, where you're cleaning up the insides of the plants a little bit. You know, you're continuing your fertilizer programs, your IPM program still. That's a good, important time where you have to really get a lot of predators. You don't want the russet mites and broad mites to take you over at that time of the year, which is real easy for them to do at that time. But you're also kind of coming in August, September, you're trying to kind of get a little rest in, because there's a big bust out period of harvest coming. So you're starting to prepare things for harvest at that time of the year, which is going to be hectic. It is hectic every year, you know, the different weather that comes in and just personnel management and making sure everything's going well. And then in the wintertime, you know, there's not much time off these years. I'm going straight to, you know, the mother plant work and getting the clones and everything prepared for that next spring. At that time also, we're getting ready for the Emerald Cup and stuff like that in December. And it's really turned into a year-round project. And, you know, there's so many different angles as to things going on right now with the permitting and all the business things and stuff. But I'm finding myself, I'm just addicted to the farming part. So, like, I try to focus on that, but I'm spread thin because there's all the other stuff you got to keep going right now, too, and stuff. But I'd call it typical day these days, extremely long, long days.
Yeah, it sounds long, but it also sounds like you're growing with passion and with love for the plant, and that's what keeps you going. And it seems like that's actually it's proof in the pudding. It's, you know, you've won all these awards, and sounds like you're putting out great products. So it sounds like it's rough, but it's also you get the great payouts.
Thank you very much. It is. You have very rare moments where you're like, what the heck am I doing, man? I need to get a life.
Well, for me as a consumer, I really appreciate the time and the love that you're putting into it.
Thank you very much, Jay.
So what kind of go and more of a macro view and a futuristic view of kind of where you're going, where's the farm going, where's Green Chalk going in the future, a year, 2 years, 3 years? And then also, if you would touch on, where do you think this cannabis in Mendocino specifically, where do you think it's going? Where do you think it's headed?
I'm glad you mentioned that. You know, I would say this product coming out of Mendocino, I think it's destined for worldwide market success. You know, there's a lot of amazing farms up here. There's a lot of amazing appellations and terroir that's up here in Mendocino. It's like truly one of the, when you boil down what it takes to grow really good cannabis, you need the right environments and everything. And this is exactly what it takes right here. So I think it's destined for a really good worldwide. What we don't have is, you know, we don't have a lot of the big corporations coming out of Mendocino, so you're not seeing it out there a lot right now. You're not hearing about it because it's a very small market of product. And the corporations, you know, with that money marketing strategy, you're always hearing about what they're up to, not what the little guys are up to and stuff. But the little guys are working really hard up here, producing amazing flower. And, you know, I know there's a lot of other places right now that are opening up, like let's just use Oklahoma as an example. And, you know, I'm sure they're producing some good flower out of Oklahoma too, but let's be real about it. You know, the wine industry, you don't see a lot of wine coming out of places that aren't like those right, perfect places. That's why Napa wine's so special, California wine in general. You don't see a lot of Oklahoma wine on the market. You don't see a lot of indoor wine on the market either. But so I know what this product is about up here. And once people start to get experiencing it more, especially the good quality product, you know, there might be people through the years that had Mendocino or what is allegedly sold as Emerald Triangle Cannabis. And a lot of times it's not even Emerald Triangle Cannabis, or it's from the farms or the farmers that aren't producing like the clean, good medicine, you know. So once we're able to get our products out there in front of consumers, I think that they'll be very aware of what's happening and they're going to gravitate to these type of products. You know, I mean, I know I get to test all the different cannabis that's on the market out. The boys do. We're big consumers and we know what we have compared to some of that other flower. So I don't think a lot of, like, you know, that indoor flower, whether it be grown in SoCal desert or Nevada desert or Oklahoma plains or Florida, wherever it comes from, there is no terroir or appellation in that. And so for us up in these places to be able to show off what that stuff represents, I know it's got a big future for it.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I just think it's up to, just not up to, it's a matter of time before consumers become educated on it. The Appalachia program is going to be great for that education and, you know, just matter of time getting the word out and spreading the word. And, you know, I think, like I mentioned, proof's in the pudding. The product that you put out is fantastic and it's clean. And I think at the end of the day, the best product is going to win. I think the market always usually picks the good products. And so, yeah, no, I think it's great.
I'll touch on one thing real quick just to be aware of coming this year, which I think is a fantastic thing. I know some people aren't so happy about it, but the Emerald Cup's going to move down to Los Angeles this year. And in April, there'll be the big awards contest down there. And it's really a lot about, you know, showing what California has to offer here with the farms that are up here competing now against the big, or not all of them are big, but the indoor farms and the different light depth farms and stuff that are down there, and really comparing this stuff and seeing what the best product is. So this is going to be that first time where you have a really high quality level of judges that are going to be consuming all of it and, you know, trying to decipher and figure out what they like in the best. And I think over these next few years, it's going to be really exciting to see how well this product competes, or perhaps I think it'll even be beating a lot of those products. So it's going to be fun to see how that all works out.
Yeah, that's interesting that you mentioned that angle from it, because I was one of the people, I was not happy to hear that it's going down to LA, but now that you mentioned that perspective, that's actually a really good thing. Now you're going into their home turf and say, hey, I'm here. What do you guys got?
Exactly. Let's compare.
Yeah.
Let's see what we got here.
That's awesome. No, I really like that.
So I feel it's a super opportunity to be able to show off what we have up here.
Yeah, it's a really good perspective to have on it. and then I know we've touched on, you know, the different, how Green Shock, you guys have a lot of rare phenotypes and a lot of rare terpenes in your cannabis. Is there, other than that, is there something, and you know, you guys also do fully organic in the ground. If you haven't touched on it already, is there something that really sets apart Green Shock cannabis and flowers from other cannabis flowers?
you know, besides being our own in-house flavors and kind of developed them ourselves, so like these strains wouldn't be able to be really counterfeited at all. We have something that's very unique that we've developed. You know, the way we grow it, we, a lot of love goes into these plants. Nothing's done with shortcuts. Everything's kind of the long and hard way. I feel like the utilizing the area, you know, we're really good at incorporating and utilizing and letting nature help us to grow our plants. So, you know, those are the main things that I think we really stand for. And we represent the culture really hard, too. You know, we'll never let the culture die. We come from the culture, so we keep that part alive and everything, too.
Mm, yeah, no, it's great. And the product and the message you guys send is fantastic. Where can people find your products? And
thank you for asking that, yeah. Jared. We're getting out there more and more all the time
you
right
are.
Now.
You are. Found you in the Bay Area.
Thank you. I'm glad you found us. I think, you know, right now I'm thinking it sounds like we're in about 70 shops through the state, and we really appreciate those shops that are carrying our products. You know, we started to run into problems with getting on shelves, realizing that people pay for shelf space and getting front and center like that and stuff. So for some of the shops that have taken a chance on us, it's been some funny stories we've heard. You know, we'll start on the very bottom little corner, like, ah, man, maybe we'll give them a chance. We start down there, and next thing you know, start moving a little more closer to the center. And sometimes we've heard by week two or three, you know, we're right there front and center. So it's really a good example of the flower kind of selling itself. You know, like you said, the people know once they smoke it and try things, they start finding what good flowers are, and they're not going to want to buy bad flowers. So when they know what something good is, they buy it. But yeah, we're in about 75 shops. You know, we're up here. I know we're in Cloverdale, at Red Door Remedies. You know, we're down in the Bay Area. We're in Sacramento, shops in SoCal, down in San Diego. Our distributor, you know, that's another thing that getting into this business right now has been so funny. Working with different distributors, and you know, they come in, and these are the guys that kind of got the money a lot of times and have the setups to help you. And they, so far, they rarely help you. You know, they bring you in to sort of try to a lot of times just figure out what you're doing and how to help themselves. And you know, they're of course putting their products front and center and trying to sell that. So it's been really hard linking up with a good distributor that really worked with us. And we did last year, 2 years ago, the guys at Bright Labs have really stepped up and been able to help us a lot in getting out to those shops and stuff. And managing those accounts is a big difficulty. You know, we're just a few farmers. So for all the collections and the sales thing, there's a lot going on there. So they've really stepped up and helped us out a lot.
Awesome. Is there anywhere that people can, if they want to find your product, can they go search for it anywhere?
Super. Yes, sir. Thank you. It's on our website on greenshockfarms.com. We have a store locator on there. And if you click on the store locator, you'll see the different stores.
Go check it out. And is there anything else you want to let the people know that you got going on?
You know, what we're doing is we're going to have a lot of fun this year, man. It's good to link up with people like you, Jared, here, and just try to, a lot of times, you know, we have our agenda of what we want to see happening. We're going to be building our brand and stuff, but in reality, it's funny how life works. You know, there's a lot of different roads that come and open up and stuff. So I'm looking forward to seeing some of these roads that we don't know exist yet that are going to be opening up here and there for us and just seeing where things take us. But we know we're going to be getting out there as things open up. You know, the boys are heading all over the country doing shows and stuff. I'm going to try joining some of them. I love coming watching the music, and I love seeing everybody out there. You know, I love people that love cannabis, and I love talking about it and just sharing a joint and stuff. So I just want to say I love everybody out there. I love our culture. Thank you all.
Perfect. Love it, too. And thank you for having me.
Our pleasure. Thank you for coming up here, Jared. Really appreciate that.
Anytime.
Thanks for the time.
Yeah, thank you.
Pleasure.